Andy Gray, striker and shouty commentary man. Played for Villa, Wolves, Everton, Rangers and Dundee United. Winner of two League Cups, the English League, the FA Cup, European Cup Winners' Cup, a lot of cups, and the Scottish Premiership. 20 caps for Scotland, a whole load of bad stuff I don't want to talk about. And of course, author, but let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
The ball comes in from Damien Duff and Didier Drogba says, thank you very much.
It's the first time I've given up on a book. I don't think I'll ever finish it.
Imagine going to Tiger Tiger and having a steak. Ugh.
Jim Davidson, Russ Abbott and Bernie Winters.
I want you to tell me, is it 50 Shades of Grey or Andy Gray? Hooray! Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Marion Keyes, more Richard Keyes. Oh, I feel horrible. God.
Why would you mention Richard Keyes?
Why would I mention Andy Gray?
Why are we doing this? Yes.
I'm James Berg, and over the weeks, we're going to be reading classics such as Steve Bruce's Heading for Victory and Carlos Carvajal's ebook, Soccer, Developing a Know-How. Remember Carlos Carvajal?
No.
Sheffield Wednesday manager? Oh, okay. Well, he's got an ebook. But today, we're reading Andy Gray's genuinely titled Shades of Grey from all the way back in 1986. And reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Bowden.
Hello.
Rough estimate, do we think this is going to be more or less sexy than 50 Shades of Grey?
That I judging by the cover.
Has anyone read actual 50 Shades?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
And I don't believe the rest obviously. Of you.
I recorded the film once because I was interested and I never got around to watching it because I moved out the flat.
But,
I think you said recorded the film as in like went to the cinema with a phone going like...
Yeah.
This is great.
Is it a good book, 50 Shades of Grey?
50 Shades of Grey is an absolutely terrible book, but spoiler alert, it's 4,000 times better than Andy Gray's Shades of Grey.
I think it's sort of unfair, or it's interesting, because I reckon, who wrote this again? E.L. James?
Is Andy, that Gray.
Andy Gray wrote this. Who wrote 50 Shades? E.L. James.
E.L. James.
Do you think she was like, I need a really good title for this book? Oh, Andy Gray, the old Scotland striker. I could do a pun on that.
Is the main character called Andy Gray?
He's
Christian,
called Christian Gray, but there Christian isn't Gray. Few moments in the book where he calls himself Mr. Gray and I wanted to vomit.
What, he calls himself Mr. Andy Gray?
Oh, and he's going to stop talking about his red room in a minute. God,
I can already tell there's going to be a disgusting episode.
I know.
Claret and blue room.
Yeah. Very good, James. Everyone had a good day in general?
No. I had to finish this book.
I know, yeah. Me too.
And now you've thrown sex into it.
Sex is everywhere, Jack. Get on board, man.
Grow up. Sex is everywhere.
1986, come on.
1980 sex, that's what they should call it.
Wait.
Yeah. Go on. Lad Tubbs back. So you've been reading that book all day. I read the book ages ago. Not bragging. That was a brag. I read it on a beach, and I genuinely think I'm the only person ever to read Andy Gray's Shades of Grey on a Mediterranean beach. I can't imagine anyone.
It looks like it's one of those fake covers that you can get for really seedy novels. So I bet a few people thought that you were actually trying to read a bit of E.L. James on the beach.
I don't know what's more embarrassing, I'll be honest.
Andy Gray in his short shorts on the front.
Yeah.
Did anyone come up to you like, sir, you have to leave. This is disgusting.
Yeah, Sean
this
Massey.
Is a public beach.
I really hope that somebody has accidentally picked this up instead of 50 Shades of Grey at some point and read it on a beach.
Well, you're bringing me very much to Amazon's reviews.
No.
Do you want to hear this? Yeah. Oh, no. The book has 3.5 stars from 7 reviews, and every single one does exactly the same joke that James just did.
You hack, James.
Can you cut that out?
It is very damning on your career. Here's one review. 2 stars from Matthew. Upset wife is the subject. I bought this book for my wife after all the girls at work were getting fidgety whilst reading it during their lunch breaks. Getting fidgety.
I know. Oh, God.
Strap him for the next hour. My missus was very disappointed. I was all ready and waiting in the bedroom for her, and all I got was a slap and a kick in the balls. Lesson one, learn to spell.
Learn to spell? Oh, what are you talking about?
Because 50 Shades of Grey is with an E.
I still don't. That's not the problem here. The problem is that he's under 50. I mean, there's many problems.
Learn to read.
Learn to read, you idiot.
Learn to count. More like it.
Has anyone got any memories of Andy Gray?
Oh, yes, a few.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he did, like, for ages, he was, like, the voice of football.
Okay. I'm not defending anything he's ever done.
Oh, no, here we go.
He's got... But all I'm saying is they deserve... No. all I'm saying is the man did have a great commentary voice. He has a very good voice on Sky.
I think he does have a good commentary voice. He also has a really good habit of like saying what the players would say when they like had a cross come into them. And I can't get out of my head. It's when like the cross comes into the box and he goes, and the striker says, "Thank you very much." And I love that.
Yeah, he used to do it all the time.
He goes like, the ball comes in from Damien Duff and Didier Drogba says, "Thank you very much." As if like all the players would be going, "Oh, Damien, thank you for that cross. Absolutely smashing. Thank you."
See, that's miles better than anything Alan Smith has ever said. Alan Smith, the most dull man in the world.
Leave Alan Smith alone.
Alan Smith is smudgy.
You would like him, Mr. Arsenal boy. Yeah. But I think, James, you do a really good impression of him. Sorry to put you on the spot. You do a really good Alan Smith impression.
You are putting me on the spot, but now you mentioned it, you know, I might as well do it. No, Alan Smith's interesting because he always mentions the player's nationality for some reason. It's like his little thing. So he'll say, I don't know, give me a player and I'll do it.
Emmanuel Adebayor.
Where's he from? Togo. Wait, a better one. So you talk about...
Zola.
No, this is too old. We need more current than that.
Oh, God.
Andy Gray.
Stephen Fletcher.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, go. Yeah, and he just couldn't quite get his head to it there, the Scottish striker.
That's better than the actual Alan Smith. I would listen to that for an hour.
That is so good. That is such a good impression.
It's
God.
Only one I can do.
Oh, I love it.
He either says the nationality or the age. He'll say the young striker. I'll say that.
It sort of sounds like he's trapped in a box.
James, when we read Alan Smith's autobiography, are you going to do the dramatic reading for us in his voice?
Oh, of course.
Yes.
That'd be so good.
Right, let's suffer through this episode, then we'll do that. Okay, as the show goes on, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and of course, Ken Zong is back with another chant about an ex-Wigan player. But first, let's go around the group in a sentence or two. What did you think of the book? Tash?
Chaotic junk.
That good, huh?
I think that's also why he got fired from Sky as well.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Oh,
joke,
fantastic.
Joke.
joke.
We got one. We got a joke.
15 episodes in. Done it. James, you liked it?
Yeah. No. I texted you today and said, I've still got 70 pages to read. And you said, will you have enough time? And I was like, yeah, I've got all day. And then I don't think I'll ever finish it. I think I read 90% of it. I gave up on it. It's the first time I've given up on a book. I hated it. I really hated it.
The last... Okay. Well, do you want to do your rating now out of 10? Just head off.
I think also it's because it's so old as well. I think it's dated, isn't it?
It's one of those, like Tash mentioned the cover before, it's one of those books that you kind of find in a charity shop somewhere. Mm. And we got it. I don't mean to keep advertising Amazon, but it's on Kindle Unlimited. That's the only way we kind of thought about doing it, because it's free on a... Jeez, this is turning into an advert. I need to play the Mordell Coaches music underneath. Yeah. And the thing about Amazon is they make you feel... it really is one of those books that I don't think he put loads of effort into when he wrote it. It was just one of those things that footballers seem to do at that time, just release a... you know, a 200-page book which loosely chronicled their life. And this one starts in, I think he wrote it when he was 31, so quite young when he did it. Yeah, 30, yeah.
I mean, I bought the actual book, and as much love went into crafting the actual book as what's inside it, so it's falling to pieces. Yep. Shoddy workmanship, Andy Gray.
Who? I don't think he. I don't think he like made the book.
I don't think Andy Gray didn't bind the book.
I don't know.
That we can hold.
Give me that page over there, and I say thank you very much.
Wait, what did Adam Smith say?
Yeah, he just couldn't quite get it together there, the young structure.
That's so good.
Oh, let's just give up on the book. This is great. Jack, you liked it?
The thing about this book is I hated it.
Do you remember Colin Murray said that Graham Souness might want to kill us? And we were pretty nice to Graham Souness.
Oh, Andy Gray's stuck in Dubai, isn't he? He's never
going to. Is that where he lives now?
Yeah, I think
Andy Gray won't dare come on this podcast while I'm on here, so don't worry about it.
I'm not worried about him coming on the podcast.
I'll put the video on and like accidentally pull a boob out or something and he'll shit himself.
God, that's the solution.
Got to play these people at their own game, you know?
I won't lie, you've stumped me with that one. There's literally no follow-up to that.
Thank you very much, and good night.
Okay, so Jet liked it, Tash liked it, James liked it.
James, right. What did you think?
I didn't like it. Right, so first of all, it wasn't the un-PC nightmare I feared, / hoped for. It was just it was kind of offensive because it was just a bit nothing all the way through. But one thing that was important to take from it is that the 70s is the weirdest era in history. In all of human history.
There's a lot very of very strange. Odd things that happen. But also, he's lived a life, but you're right. It is very nothing because he'll just be like, oh, what a time that was. Anyway, back to Scotland I went, boop ba doop. And like, there's no development about anything. I feel like if Andy Gray had quite an interesting career, if he had hired, I don't know, Grant Holt to ghostwrite his book, probably would have been quite a good book.
How old was Grant Holt in 86?
We've already talked about how Grant Holt could like travel back through time to read a letter to himself. Yeah. So he can quantum leap back to Andy Gray's era.
Well, maybe if Andy Gray wasn't such a total wally, he would have been asked to write the follow-up and then he could have got Grant Holt to do it. But alas, I fear we'll never get Two Shades of Grey, you know?
Well, there's another book called Grey Matters, isn't there?
Grey Matters.
Is there?
And I think his next one will be # Grey Lives Matter. which will be the un-PC nightmare.
God, this is fun, isn't it? The book is set in 1986.
Set in 1986.
A different world.
Like, as if Andy Gray was
1986.
was imagining an alternate universe.
And, it's slap bang in a second spell at Villa. So I think I didn't know loads about Andy Gray's career going into this. I knew he was a good player, but, you know, it's before our time, isn't it? We're just little boys. And Tash is a girl.
As we talked about before with the.
Oh no!
Oh, it's rubbing off on you.
End the podcast now. Yeah. Andy, I love you. I know that I told Tash off for blaming him for the binding of his book earlier, but Jack and I were mentioning how there's a lot of errors in spelling mistakes, which isn't his fault. Again, it's a Kindle error.
No, it's not, because I've got the paperback, a hardback, and they're in there as well.
Oh. No, that's remarkable.
So one of the ones I noticed early on was he writes something about how the Villa manager finally made me leave the dub I felt so much for, which really like undermined the sentence.
It really did. I love that.
I love the dub. Dub.
Yeah. Dub be good to me.
Andy, you're going to have to leave the dub.
No! But there's loads of other ones we're going to come to all the way
basically
through.
Basically, every time he types modern, it gets redone as modem.
Yeah.
Which is very odd, because he talks about, like, I wanted to have, like, a modem, like a modem club. And I was like, what, like an internet club? Like, you all go around
I'm
the stuff the internet?
I'm glad you said that,
way ahead of his
that
time.
Was like a typeface thing, you know? But is it just a laziness thing instead?
I don't know. I guess it is.
It looks like R and N looks like an M. So unless maybe his typewriter didn't work.
This is font observations on Club.
This is nowhere near the most boring thing we've done on the show. So if you've just started listening,
strap in.
It's weird though, because he does actually mention the fact that he was the best speller in his class or something as well.
Yeah.
That is the sweetest and weirdest brag in the whole thing. He says something like, at the age of 7, I was the only person in my class who could spell the word beautifully. And I thought it was really sweet.
Well,
also,
what
a strange thing to mention at age 31.
This is what I wanted to debate. He said, I was the only kid in class who could spell beautifully. Was he saying that he could spell the word beautifully, or that he was a beautiful speller?
I worked this out. He does mean the word beautifully, because you can't spell beautifully. You can have a spell or you can't. It's not like...
Binary.
It's like,
that is beautiful spelling.
But then also, it made me laugh because he could have just said beautiful, because the hard bit is the start, right? The B E.
No,
yeah.
So I think some people really screw up the ending.
Yeah, but
they go double E.
It's like
it's like
Scrabble or Countdown or something. He's like, I'll just add a couple, make it beautifully. And then it's an even longer word that I can spell correctly.
So we've worked out he was a child genius. Jack, you weren't too keen in the beginning, you told me, and it is confusing. Is it the same in the paperback? I'm guessing. It starts off with him signing for Wolves.
Well, there's about 4 pages where he tells you the entirety of the book, and then I had to read it in more detail for the next 200 pages, what he'd already told me.
I really thought we were missing like a page or like,
we
were missing like any kind
pages.
Of context. Yeah.
Oh God, maybe there are other pages, we've got to read them.
Oh God, imagine if he emails us and says... Here's more pages. Thank you very much. No, but it's such a weird start, because he starts by saying, in my second season, I topped the goal scorers, was voted player of the year again. And I felt like I was like having an aneurysm. I was like, oh my God, have I read 3 chapters of this already? Who is this man?
I don't know what club he was at and stuff. I think it really expects you to be a Andy Gray expert right at the top.
What's also, I mean, the whole start is interesting, because the whole book is chronological, except for this first chapter. And most books, if they're not chronological, they'll have like a bit at the start that'll be their career highlight. They'll be like when we did Jersey Dudek, it was like that save against AC Milan. And when it was Grant Hull, it was like scoring a goal against Liverpool. Andy Gray's highlight is signing for Wolves. Not playing for Wolves, signing for Wolves.
But... to defend Andy, if
no.
I know a bit more,
no, not to defend Andy.
let him and me finish. I think there is a bit of drama there, because he's realised that he's got a few problems with his knee, and it is a massive moment.
No. So it's a big deal.
I know what you mean.
If your highlight is signing for a team, that implies that everything that came afterwards wasn't as good as signing for them.
See, I agree. And also, Wolves isn't his best period either as a player.
It's also so weird, because he's written this book like when he's back at Villa. He's in a Villa shirt in the front. So he starts at the exact moment that he leaves Villa for their Birmingham rivals. It's so weird.
That is true. I think I thought he chose it not for the highlight thing, but because it was the most dramatic moment, because he's having a medical and they're not sure if it's going through or not, which is, you know, that also happens in some books.
But then it's sort of portrayed as like, you know, the fans loved me and everyone was so happy that I was there. And at one point he says that the manager, like when he signed, the manager turned to the crowd and did the Churchillian salute. And it's like, it's not D-Day, guys. Like, Jesus Christ. It's just a Scottish player moving across the city. Let's chill out.
He kept talking about himself in the third person
day for Andy Gray.
Yeah.
Andy Gray was quite amazed by what was going on in front of him.
He loves talking in the third person. That didn't surprise me. Yeah. That didn't surprise me. He's a third person kind of guy.
Andy Gray really didn't spend a lot of time proofreading his book, did he?
So... the first chapter is a disaster. Chapter 2, I thought that was all quite sweet when he was a little child. I thought that was all very sweet. Growing up in Drumchapel in Glasgow. I feel for his mum. He said, with 3 sons already, my mum Margaret had a heart set on a daughter. When I came along, she cried.
That's a really sad bit. And then he's like, haha, remember mom when you cried? Wasn't that funny? And I make her laugh with it all the time. But really, it's hiding some deep emotional trauma.
Yeah, like when Dad went round and burst all the green balloons.
Oh God, that was weird. Yeah. because that represents Celtic.
He's a big Rangers boy, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
This second chapter of the book is good, but there are a lot of like I described to James as Grandpa Simpson moments where it's just him doing extremely dull anecdotes that sound like a bit from Grandpa Simpson. There's a bit where he talks about like how his mum used to buy penguins and they used to come in foil packets. Which was the style at the time. And like everyone in the family would only eat the blue penguins, and all the green ones were the ones that were always left, because you know, sectarianism.
There's so many of them stories that go nowhere, and he sets them up as if they're going to be. My favorite one is the reason why it's my favorite one is because he talks about it like it's gone down in Glasgow folklore. Do you remember this? with his careers advisor.
Yes.
And I was God.
He says, you know, this story is so crazy. It led to a confrontation with a careers officer, which is still talked about in Glasgow to this day. And I was like, oh, here we go. And I was expecting him to, you know, like, I stormed in and I was trashing the office saying, I'm never going to be a mechanic or whatever. And the story is, he walks in, she goes, what do you want to do? Then he goes, oh, I've already decided I'm going to be football. And she goes, okay, then, see you. That's literally it.
And then he says, and I told my friends, and they couldn't believe it when their reaction was probably like, okay, yeah, cool.
Okay, cool.
Oh, that's fair enough. You're pretty good at football.
And it's not really like me
turning around and saying it, is it? Like, he was quite good at football. Get over it, Andy.
Yeah.
Do you think he had the same voice when he was a kid? Yeah, that bombastic like commentary voice. And the career advisor says, thank you very much. Next appointment. So he starts off at Dundee United, I think it is, isn't it? And he does pretty well there, and he goes on a big move to Villa.
Just before that, he says like, oh, it was quite a week that I had before. Like, I was supposed to be playing at Celtic and I was out the team. And then it turned out I was going to go to Germany to, where was he going to go? Frankfurt or Stuttgart? Somewhere like that.
Yeah, something like that.
He describes Germany as the land of Beckenbauers and Müllers. Like it's dinosaurs. Ah, the land of Beckenbauers, where the Beckenbauers roam free. And he is a really
the land
good...
before Rhine.
The second Thank joke. The second joke. And he also talks about how like he says the German offer was so good, it was almost too good to be true. And you're thinking, oh wow, it must have been too good to be true, it must collapse. And he said, it wasn't too good to be true, I just didn't want to go to Germany anyway. What kind of story is that?
Yeah, but it surely was a very good player, as to be kind of, a lot of teams were after him at that time.
Yeah.
So it's pretty quite, never, a, it was quite a coup that, to go to Villa.
I suppose because I have no understanding of this period of football.
Mm-hmm.
So I am sort of like, is that good? Is he good? He'll like mention these players where you're like, oh, old ratty Dougburn and Dougie Ratburn used to kick the ball to
me. My God, there's so many people called Doug in this
game.
Yeah. It's so confusing.
So many.
There's one
Dougie
sentence.
Deanie Duggos.
Oh my God. There's one sentence in particular about a guy who's the head of the PFA. Where he writes, Derek Dugan, the Doug, wanted to know if there's any way I can make it on my own, Doug wondered. It's like a tongue twister.
Doth Doug declare? But I realised that it's probably what anyone who listens to this podcast and doesn't like know anything about footballers from the mid-90s or like early noughties, like that's probably what they're thinking all the time. When we're like, oh my God, Freddie Eastwood. They're like, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, but at Villa, I wonder if his life would have turned out differently had he not met Ron Saunders. Yeah, he seems a bad guy. I don't like the way he treats Andy.
Well, I know, but because I dislike Andy, I was kind of rooting for him.
See, this is the thing. We've got to distance. Because if this book was written by someone else, I think we'd have been like, that's bad. But we wouldn't have slagged it off as much as this. I think... But yeah, the Ron Saunders thing. I mean, he always ruins his career by making him play when he's, you know, not fully fit and forces
that
him.
Stuff was dodgy. And it sounded like he did that a lot.
He's a despot. Like he's Jafar.
It sounds a bit like sort of Real Housewives nastiness, like bitchy, backstabby, petty. Calling him disgusting and a chicken and all this. Oh, yeah.
You disgusting like chicken!
Yeah, that's what he said.
It's so weird. Although, okay, so basically they fall out because Ron Saunders, no, because Andy Gray says he doesn't want to play, or he's injured, so he can't play against Bayern Munich, yeah. Barcelona, someone.
Okay.
And Ron Saunders, like, he's a disgusting chicken to someone else. And yeah. Andy Gray, from that point, is like, oh, I can't believe he said that. I hate him. But he then says, I didn't confront him because I didn't know what it would achieve. But, like, to me, if someone called me a disgusting chicken, and I was willing to, like, leave a club because of it, I probably would at least try and have it out with the guy who said it.
You're right. You want to know,
like, it seems so a bit, it seems
if I was calling you a disgusting chicken to James,
yeah,
which, in WhatsApps, for example, and you found out,
I swear to God, if you've done that, I would probably say, hey James, why are you calling me a disgusting chicken? I wouldn't then say, I'm going to engineer a move away from this podcast.
And to quickly
move,
Kevin.
Yeah, to move on to quickly Kevin for a record-breaking deal.
Good luck to you. Bye.
I've got a bit of a conspiracy theory about this, though, because I think our Andy is not such a reliable narrator. Because a bit later on...
I think that's the odd sign with that.
Does this involve Alton Towers?
Sadly not. But he says that Ron Saunders lets him leave at half time, like he's halfway through a shift at work or something, to go to his club opening.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a bad guy to me.
He spends the whole time being like, oh, he's evil. And then there are quite a few bits like that where you're like, actually, maybe Ron's not too bad. Yeah. Also, it's worth saying that, like, the other interesting thing about this book is that Andy Gray spends the whole time being like, oh, I completely justified moving from Villa to Wolves. It was totally justified. I at Wolves, won the League Cup. The next season, they get relegated.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you know what Villa were doing when Wolves were getting relegated? Or maybe they weren't. Maybe it was the year before. Villa
won the league.
They won the league in 1981. And this is the thing he doesn't talk about.
They won the Champions League around.
You wouldn't know,
well.
Would you?
But it's just mad to be like, oh God, I'm so glad I got out of that championship winning team.
Yeah.
To win the League Cup and then get relegated. Like, I feel like Ron doesn't get enough, because he does sort of like begrudgingly midway through the book, he's like sort of like, oh, fair play to him. I guess he did win the league, but I had something he could never have.
What's that?
A blue penguin wrapper. I think Ron sounds like a bit of a hard guy, but he got results. I'm sure.
We'll never know until someone flogs him a Christmas tree. We'll never find out his true personality. Sadly, he died last year. But if anyone sold Ron Saunders a Christmas tree, get in touch. We can find out. We can put him on a scale of, you know, evil to Glenn Roeder. Who wants Ken's song this week? Oh wait, so yes. just one last thing with Ron Saunders. We put him in the Hall of Shame or not then?
No.
Okay.
I think because I have another candidate for a Hall of Shame that's coming out later.
Oh, okay. Whoa. Very nice. Oh, all right, I say excited. Is it Ken?
Is it Andy Gray? No.
Andy Gray is already automatically entry. Ken's song this week. We remember Ken. Is it writing a new... You remember him. Every week he writes another charm about a former footballer for Wigan, this series. And this one goes... to the tune of Gay Bar by Electric Six. Oh, we're really skating very close to with this episode. The song goes, goal! You know it's Hugo Rodallega. You know it's Hugo Rodallega. You know it's Hugo Rodallega. Ega. Ega. He's back to his best.
That's cracking. That's very good.
Ken's
I completely
on.
Forgot about Hugo Rodallega.
No, he's doing well.
And now I'll never be able to stop thinking about it whenever I'm in.
All the stuff of Villa goes wrong, though. And this is where the book really does come to life. Not in terms of quality, but in terms of quantity of insane stories.
Yes.
I think it really kicks off. However, there is a funny thing I wanted to flag at the beginning. He has a bizarre coping strategy for when it all goes wrong at Villa. He says, and I quote, in my early days at Villa, Whenever I felt under pressure or depressed by injury, I would resort to my early morning cure. I'd get up and leave home at the unearthly hour of 6 o'clock and drive down to the main bus depot in Birmingham. And I would just sit and watch for an hour, watching the local people go to work. So what Andy does, he just goes and watches poor people to feel better about himself, which is a really strange way of doing
it. I found that stuff really upsetting, genuinely, because... Like he sort of says like, oh, it's not to gloat, but it sort of is to gloat, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, thank God I'm not them.
It's hard not to escape that like conclusion. And also because he then spends the rest of the book, like every time he talks about like Merseyside or Birmingham, he'll say something like, oh God, they haven't had a lot to smile about recently with all the unemployment. And you're sort of like, this is a little bit classless in some ways because you are a multi-million pound footballer earning lots of money. I don't know.
But you know, he hasn't, he never went on to do anything else controversial. So benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt to the guy. So.
But there are, it truly is a, you know, avalanche of bizarre stories after this.
Yeah.
He sleeps on a wooden board for a week because his back hurts. He gets loads of Turkish women apparently proposed to him, which never happened, but
that was so
funny.
Odd. Because it was
nice for there to be a woman in the book, though, so I was grateful.
Oh, there's a woman in the book later as well, when he talks about a famous woman at his nightclub called...
Oh.
What's her name?
Fiona Richmond, the sex queen.
The sex queen.
Her Royal Highness herself.
Yeah. The royalty of... Because you guys know what a sex queen is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a sex queen.
Yeah.
A classic sex queen.
I think it's someone who does a podcast and gets their boob out to try and distract Andy Gray.
Yes. Made it. Yeah.
I crown thee the sex queen, Tash.
Natasha, coming, the first. Andy, watch out.
Like, there are so many weird stories of this in this book.
Oh, well, the mentioning Fiona Richmond, the sex queen, and you mentioned it as well, Tash, that the nightclub is incredible.
Amazing.
He buys a nightclub, which fails very quickly.
I really want someone to buy the rights to this and turn it into a drama.
Well, it's so
good.
Yes. Because it's called the Human Zoo.
The Holy City Zoo.
The Holy City Zoo.
That's it. Yeah.
But he does. He like calls at one point, we had our very first human zoo in the... in Birmingham. Yeah. And you could call it We Bought a Human Zoo. So
it had the weirdest guest list.
Matt Damon
list.
Plays Andy Gray.
Yeah. Had the weirdest guest list I have ever heard of a club. And it absolutely does not surprise me that he is the way that he is.
No.
Jim Davidson, Russ Abbott, and Bernie Winters.
It's, and he describes them as all the people who were happening at the time.
Yes.
Sadly, they probably were. He also says, our plan was to provide a sophisticated nightclub where the food, surroundings, and company were a cut above the average. Who serves food at a nightclub?
Yeah.
Imagine going to Tiger Tiger and having a steak. Ugh, yeah.
I've got a spaghetti carbonara here for Jim Davison. So odd.
I've got another Kindle error, if you're excited.
Okay.
The nightclub goes wrong, and you get this great typo. My mate Rab left as well, and only when those two are gone did I anally come to my senses and get an accountant to take a good look at the business.
How do you anally come to your senses? The very strong suppository. It's interesting because he does also spend a lot of this book saying, and also because it's clear from the book, like he starts off really well and then his career seems to go off the rails. I feel like that's or slow down, at least his career definitely slows down. He doesn't fulfill his potential, but he spends the whole time being like, I was always very careful. I was so careful not to do anything too rash apart from buying a nightclub and hanging out with sex queens all the time.
Do you want this week's dramatic reading?
Yes.
I sort of dread it, but sure.
This week's dramatic reading is called... can someone cue the dramatic music?
Cue!
Dramatic music.
Thank you.
Oh, nice. You cued the cure. I doff my hat to thee.
Yeah. Natasha the First Sex Queen at your service.
This week's dramatic reading is called Andy Gray Walks Barefoot Around Birmingham City Centre. There was a time, just a few weeks after I'd been transferred to Wolves, when the press went mad, or went made, as it says, with a story about me walking barefoot through the streets of Birmingham. It was a hot September day, and quite often in the summer when it gets really warm, I discard my shoes and walk around with bare feet, as you do.
That is mad.
When you're out and about.
That is absolutely made. Like being a millionaire who then discards your shoes when it gets too hot.
Yeah, it's like he's doing a keynote speech for Apple or something like that. It's kind of like kind of hippie CEO.
Do you mind if I just take my shoes off and throw them into Birmingham Canal?
One lunchtime, I was having a coffee in Birmingham and spotted a traffic warden looking my car up and down. It was parked on a yellow line, so fair enough if you have a look at it.
Yeah.
So I rushed out to move it before I got handed a ticket. Just my luck that a photographer from a local paper was passing by and spotted me walking across the road with no shoes on. just my luck. Before I knew it, the camera was clicking and suddenly the whole story snowballed. It was in the evening paper and some of the nationals the next day. What was Britain's most expensive footballer doing walking around with bare feet? Someone suggested it was irresponsible. To me, it was just a natural thing. It's just cool, man. It's the 70s.
Just deal with it, man. Yeah. I love to walk around with my bare feet out all the time.
Me and Jim Davidson do it all the time.
Old Jimmy. It's so weird because, like, that he's acting like it's, you know, a crazy story. It's not as if, like, if he was sitting in a cafe with bare feet... That's weird. That's worse. That's as bad as walking across the street because your car's getting done. It's not the walking across that's made it bad. Yeah. It's the fact that he doesn't have bare feet.
Yeah, Andy Gray's sitting barefoot in Pret these days. That would get a few headlines.
That would get loads of headlines. That would be trending for weeks on Twitter.
If we saw Andy Gray walking around barefoot, you would be feel like, oh God, what's happened to him? He'd feel awful.
I wouldn't go up to him because of what we said on this podcast.
Okay.
Obviously.
I'll check up on him.
We all know what Tash would do. Yeah.
She doesn't even need to cross the road.
Yeah. It is really weird because he's like, oh, the press taking these things out of context. You know, they run with these ridiculous stories like Andy Gray barefoot. Anyway, I was barefoot in Birmingham. Like, there's not a disconnect there. It doesn't.
It's true. To me, it was just a natural thing. Although, as one of my pals points out, it might have been wiser to sit tight and get a parking ticket rather than run the gauntlet with the press.
I would argue that's weirder, to sit there passively.
Staring
at your car, getting a ticket with your feet completely bare.
Although he does like to watch working class people in doing working class jobs.
That's so true. Yeah,
that's true.
Kick back.
He was getting off on it.
You're like, yeah. I can afford it, mate. Don't worry. Can I pay for it in shoes?
It was best summed up by John Barnwell, my manager at Wolves, who, when asked for a reaction about his new 1.5 million spent centre forward walking barefoot, laughed and said, "If Andy wants to walk around barefoot, he can do so, as far as I'm concerned." Oof. And that's it. That was just his dramatic reading.
Oh. Very weird. Very weird.
Very
imagine
good,
seeing that. Jordan Henderson walking around Liverpool with no shoes.
I can see him doing that. I can see him doing that.
Yeah.
The most mad thing of all. Now, this is truly incredible. Something I didn't know, I don't know if many people know, Andy Gray spent 3 weeks living with Black Sabbath in America during preseason 1 year. Now, that is cool. And somehow he makes it a not cool story. But
he makes it such a dull story. Again, if Brett Hartle told this, I would be running up to people and screaming in their faces. If Brett Hartle went on tour with Snow Patrol... that's literally all I'd be able to say to them. I would just run up people and go,
anyway.
He's gone on tour with Snow Patrol. But Andy Gray makes it the most tedious story in the world.
He does. It's very much like, I think Jack, you flagged this. It's a lot like Kevin Phillips with the Mordale coaches, because he's more fussed about the fact that one's got that they've got a big car than anything else, really. Yeah. So basically, what happens is yeah, it's one of them's a Villa fan, Tony Iommi. Is that how you pronounce it? His name?
I'm a bit of a sub fan, so I can enlighten you.
The long hair isn't a coincidence.
It threw you, didn't he? My luck threw you. I liked this bit because Sabbath were one of my favorite bands, but you couldn't put a more boring person with, like, you know, some of the stories that Ozzy tells compared to the ones that are in Andy Gray's book. It's ridiculous. But it's the bassist, Geezer Butler. He's like a massive Villa fan. And even now, when he when he's talking about things on Sabbath documentaries, he only wants to talk about Aston Villa, not about Sabbath. It's very weird.
Wow.
So yeah, that'll be why. So he's just tagged along with him, and the rest of them are like, oh God,
right. Who's
this guy?
Is that why he was never in the Osbournes then?
Yeah.
That would have made it, he would have made a great cameo.
He was too busy trying to talk about Gareth Barry. Like, oh, go on. This is what he says about when he gets there. Some of the group met me at the airport in Los Angeles, and instead of jumping into a taxi, they brought their own transport. And what a set of wheels it was! I've never seen a bigger car, or can, as it says. I just noticed that.
Pop in the can!
I've never seen a bigger can in all my life, will you? A long, sleek, and shiny Cadillac drew up outside the airport terminal, and I almost expect to see the President of America himself step out. It was so impressive. Inside, it was sheer luxury. I reckon it was just about as big as our old flat back in Drumchapel. It rolled silently through the street. This really does go on. It rolled silently through the streets of Los Angeles, and I felt like a king as we made for the distant hills of Bel Air.
I think he spends more time talking about the transport of Black Sabbath than talking
than
about
Black
Everton,
Sabbath.
Or talking about Everton winning the title.
That's true.
Yeah. We partied that night, but not as hard as I partied inside the luxurious transport.
Yeah, it's just nothing really happens with Black Sabbath, sadly, does it? It's really cool that he got to do that. I'm sure it's such good fun. And I mean, imagine nowadays, like you say, who's a modern player? Manny Adderboy.
imagine like Stephen Fletcher.
Imagine Wilf Zaha just like going on preseason training with like Metallica or something like that. Like, it just wouldn't be allowed. It's insane.
It is so weird. There's a bit where he says that he had to get like fit again, so he decided to go swimming, and he describes it as I went swimming in the pool as my hosts, Black Sabbath, looked on, as if he only describes them as Black Sabbath. Like, hi, Black Sabbath. Thanks for having me.
The only story he does go into depth is a really weird story with an American girl called Donna. He plays the most boring sounding video game ever called Simon with her. Which is about
but they play it for 5 hours.
12 hours.
Oh, 10 hours, isn't it?
300 hours.
Something else happened.
They're still playing today.
I agree. I think something happened, because he said it's basically they sit and play this game where you're a flying saucer and it would light up in different colors, which God, the 70s were depressing. Yeah. And you had to try to remember the various sequences of light and then match them. And you expect them to have a romance during this, but no, they just sit there for 10 hours. This gets kind of beautiful.
Yeah, sure. But then later on, doesn't he say that Donna was going out with John Hurt?
Yes. Yes. The Elephant Man.
The Elephant Man.
Yeah. But have you seen Mamma Mia?
I think so.
Because that woman is called Donna, and she does weird romantic things for 10 hours with all sorts of different men. So maybe there's a crossover here.
Wait, are you telling me that Mamma Mia, the film, has Amanda Seyfried playing Simon,
Andy Gray's daughter,
and they play a light-up video
Andy
game
Gray,
for 10 hours.
John Hurt and one of Black Sabbath all coming to an island together to work out who's my dad.
Guys, I've got a game for you.
Yes.
Okay. I think you're going to enjoy this game. So obviously, Andy Gray's book is called Shades of Gray. I want you to tell me: is it 50 Shades of Gray or Andy Gray? Cue sexy music.
Boom chicka wow wow.
It's gonna get sexy. It's gonna get sexy up in here. Question number one: 50 Shades of Grey or Andy Grey? He always drove me hard and shouted his orders out, but this morning there was a coldness in both his manners and voice. Which is that from? What's it from? 50 Shades.
Oh my God, that's really good. That's from Andy Gray, because I think it was Jim McLean.
Oh, wow.
When they were having sex.
Knowledge of the book. It is Andy Gray during a training session at Dundee United.
Because I remember thinking that was such an odd phrase and it did sound very romantic, but he's like, there's a coldness in him now.
Number two, pulling my head back, he kisses me, his tongue urgent, relentless, needy. 50 Shades of Grey or Andy Gray?
Andy Gray with Donna.
Simon Says, baby. Oh, I hate myself. Oh.
That is 50 Shades, sadly. Being a gentleman to the very end, I couldn't hurt my partner's feelings by chatting up a friend, so I suggested we make up a foursome for another night.
That, I mean, again, that is Andy Gray.
Question 4. Todd, meanwhile, was wonderfully gifted and his ball work was spotless. Which is that? Is there a character called Todd in 50 Shades? Tash?
I don't think so, no. I mean, there may be, but I don't think it would be a human.
No. Oh. What would it be?
Put it that way. Oh, I don't know, but there's all sorts in
like
that
a,
room.
Like a sex robot that has an acronym?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, that's about Colin Todd. It's from Andy Gray's book. He has a hotline to my groin. What's that from? 50 Shades or Andy Gray?
That's Bruno Mars.
You're right, yeah. No, actually, that's from his medical at Wolves. That is 50 Shades of Grey. Only when those two are gone did I aimlessly come to my senses and get an accountant. 50 Shades or... No point doing this much longer. And finally, question 7. I love the way he came out swinging his truncheon.
That's Grant Holt.
Yes, it is. That's Grant Holt's description of the wrestler Big Boss Man in his top 5 favourite wrestlers. James, you're getting very good at seeing through me. And that was 50 Shades of Grey or Andy Grey.
Hated
it. Very good.
Jack, you're on Peter Reed Watch. Peter Reed Watch.
Oh, yeah. We got lots of Peter Reed this week. There was an opportunity for Wolves to sign them, I think, at one point.
Yeah, it was at Bolton or something, wasn't
Bolton,
it?
Bolton, yeah, and they were like, let's get Peter Reed. And Wolves said, nah, let's not. And then they got relegated. So just goes to show you. And then later on, he says that Peter Reed would be in his ultimate team. Or no, that he was,
think he was both. I think he was both, because he was a brilliant player, and he played at Everton together.
Yeah. So, and he was terrible at training.
Yes.
Which is very sweet.
Yeah. That's so, and thanks, Jack. That was Peter Reed Watch. Peter Reed Watch. Yeah, then the book kind of ends.
Hang on, I have my villain.
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah.
The Hall of Shame, the person who could go into the Hall of Shame. It's not a person. It's a thing, and it's the thing that Andy Gray blames all of Wolves' problems on. The £2.5 million stand.
Oh, yeah. They get
He will not... So basically, I was thinking it's quite interesting that Andy Gray becomes the most expensive player in football for Wolves. And then 2 years later, Wolves nearly go bankrupt. And you feel like those two things must be connected. But he blames instead all of Wolves' problems on, and for about like 5 pages, he's like, it was the new stand that they built at Molineux. The new bloody stand they built at Molineux. It ruined the atmosphere. It cost loads of money, so we couldn't buy anyone. I'm pretty sure it slept with a sex queen or two. It turned Ron Saunders against me. It forced me to get out of the pool at Black Sabbath's house. Like, he really hates the stand. I've never heard of a person having much like anger towards an inanimate object before.
But I'm happy to put the stand. You know, I'll go with the majority. I think the stand can go in the Hall of Shame. It's a weird thing to put in the Hall of Shame, but I think it's exactly the kind of thing we should be putting in. But
inanimate objects that can't fight back.
Yeah, but I do think actually Andy at heart really does care about football. There's a bit at the end which is actually quite interesting, where he jumps up on his soapbox and talks about the Football League, how to stop clubs from going out of business, how the third and fourth division should be regionalized so they haven't got to travel around and make new tables for the North, the South and the Midlands, which I thought was pretty interesting at the end. And I think some of the stuff with the stand kind of comes into that. I don't think he likes the idea of clubs folding. Perhaps he is shifting the blame, but I do think he comes from it from honest.
I actually the regionalizing thing is really interesting, especially as the Football League, you know, is currently going through the weirdest time ever. And it's actually one of those things that people are thinking about now, which is so it's quite
for sure. Yeah, I suppose. I agree. You know, basically the end of the book is just dad jokes for about 40 pages.
God.
It's insufferable.
Oh, it's so annoying. James, did you get to the dad jokes? Or did you stop at that point?
No, I when I say I read 90%, I missed a chunk out the middle. I got to the end of it.
What?
Oh, really? It was,
you missed
it
the Black Sabbath bit.
Me so much that I just missed a few pages out the middle. Yeah.
The dad jokes are so irritating. It is like just a rubbish, awful like joke book that he decides to go off on, because it starts off being like, oh, there are some funny stories I can tell you about the time I used to play with this goalkeeper, and he does that for about three
pages. He's great. John Burridge
is great, and there are some stories about John Burridge. Like,
we should read his book.
He sounds like a good guy, but then he runs out of that very quickly, and he's like, there is also the just an awful, like, I texted James about this.
Like, to explain it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I just texted him saying, can you explain the dog penis joke? And I...
That wasn't to do with the book.
That wasn't to do with the... There's a joke about, like, how a manager wants to sign a player and he's really, really good, and he goes to the player's house and he's really tall, and then his brother's really tall and the dad's really tall, and the dad says, oh, it's because we all eat the stew. And he eats some stew, and the manager eats it, and he's like, oh, this is really good stew. And then he's walking out, and he sees a dog, and the dog has a big penis. And he turns to the manager, for some reason, decides to bring it up, and says, like, oh, does he eat the stew as well? And the dad says, oh, no, he just licks the plates.
Yeah.
And then that's the joke. That's the end of the joke. That's
He licks the plates.
He licks the plates, sir. Like, what? And as James pointed out, the joke there is that he sort of has, like, tangential massive penis from the stew.
All he does is lick the plates and look at the size of his cock. Is basically what it is. So imagine if he ate the food, guy would be cruel.
But does that then mean that all the player, like the players and the dad and all that who eat the stew, and also
they're deformed.
Now the manager, they have just
hideously deformed,
horribly big penises, upsettingly big penises.
That's a good joke. Anyway, the book ends on the immortal line. One thing's for sure, though, judging by my past record, there'll be a few more lively years yet. Let's hope many more shades of grey. 50 maybe. Way.
Bought this for my wife, she didn't like it.
Did this book change you, anyone?
Okay. It changed me from being like quite content and happy to the opposite.
I learned a bit about 80s football.
I did learn a bit about 80s football. And although I felt like I learned more about 80s football by reading the Wikipedia articles of all the people that you mentioned.
I know what you mean. James, Tash, anything drastic happened to you after reading this?
No, I was so glad to have finished it, though. I felt a new lease of life. So yes, it did change me.
Okay, that's good. Rating out of 10, James?
You always say that I'm harsh, but I can't be kind about this one. It's a one.
Oh my gosh, no, it's not.
I feel like
Jack, what are you gonna get? What do you think of that?
I feel like a one has to be like the scrawled like ravings of a madman. Like Michael Owen.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with a 3.
Tash, what do you think?
He did not pass my pint test. I do not want to go for a pint with him. I'm gonna go in the middle. Give him a 2.
Oh wow! Okay, 3, 1, 2. So he's on 6 so far. This is very low. I'm gonna give him a 4. I don't think it was as terrible
hell.
As you guys made out. It wasn't as terrible. I'm gonna give him a 10. I feel sorry for him. So 10 divided by 4, 2.5. That is low.
I do think our feelings about Andy Gray have really come. Like,
yeah, they have. Exactly. But then it didn't change my view of him
and also
in any way.
He was just so relentlessly like smug and like never any moments of self deprecation.
I don't think he came across quite as terribly as that. But I didn't enjoy the book. I must admit, it was a hard.
Yeah, I don't think he was necessarily so terrible. It was just so boring.
Yeah,
it was
boring. Better than Pennant's book in my mind. But you know, who knows. Does anyone have any out of context Andy Gray?
I got a good one.
Let's hear it.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, but you'd never say that about Andy.
Tinder tagline.
Yeah.
I've got one. It's often said in dressing rooms that horses have better treatment than humans.
when is it said in dressing rooms? Yeah.
Who says that?
Which is weird because they shoot horses if they break their leg.
Yeah. And the horses only lit the plate. James?
To Andy, love and lust, Fiona.
What's that?
Horrible.
That's the sex queen.
Oh.
She signed something for him.
Sorry, I just broke the cardinal rule of no context. Asking
wait, what's the context behind that?
Yeah, tell me. Okay, this week's quiz. Jack, you're Doug. Tash, you're Doug. And James, you're Douglas Doug Doington. Everyone got their names? Okay, question one. Who does Andy score his first professional goal against?
Oh,
it's a Scottish team. Obscure Scottish team.
Douglas Doug Doington.
Yes.
Hartick Thistle.
Is incorrect.
Doug.
Yep.
Clyde? Clyde Bank?
Not Clyde. It is Dumbarton.
Dumbarton.
A point to me, King Doug. question number two. You've already named a few of these, but name any nightclub attendees. Quick fire.
Oh. Doug. Jim Davison.
Yes, that's one.
Doug.
Yep.
The Drifters.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Anyone else?
Doug.
Yeah,
Norman Wisdom.
I don't think he was there, but I could be wrong. And finally, what is Andy Gray's signature dish to cook?
Doug.
Yep.
Chili con carne, inexplicably.
Yep. Or as it's as it's generally written in my book, chili con came. Chili con came.
Did he now?
Very fitting that to end it on. Anyone has any thoughts on the book? If you've read Shades of Grey, I'm sorry. If you've got any questions, get in touch at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram. Other than that, please subscribe, review the podcast, follow us. Any last words?
Oi! Oi!
I'm flashing.
I've got one out.
Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, James Baljan, Natasha Daniels and Jack Bernhardt. It's produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Andy Gray for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Andy Gray now lives in Qatar, where he spends his days barefoot, eating nothing but penguin bars. To this day, he still hasn't eaten a green one. Black Sabbath is still touring and spent a lovely few weeks last summer with Gabbio, Bon Lahore and Olof Melberg. E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey has sold over 125 million copies worldwide, 130 million if you include all the copies of Andy's book people bought accidentally, and Donna is still playing the video game Simon 40 years later. We'll see you next week for more Football Book Club. Until then, bye-bye.